I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I am Blake Harrison and joining me as ever... Oh God, I messed up my words there. I couldn't even speak properly.
You're the actor.
I know. This is bad, isn't it? It's because I was introducing someone other than myself.
Oh, this is what happens when you don't get to talk about yourself.
Yes, the narcissist in me was like, don't say his name. Don't give him any credibility.
It's all about me.
It's all about me, the actor, me. Joining me as ever is Stu Whiffen. How you doing, mate?
I'm all right. So, we've not had a catch-up since... the Stevie Ray episode, which we recorded maybe 3 weeks ago. Was Stevie's the last one we done?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So it's been a while. Been a minute, as they say. Well, that's what cool people say, isn't it? It's been a minute.
Yeah. I don't know.
Cool people say? No, you not heard that?
How would I know that? I'm not cool.
It's been a minute, man. Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a while. I've been in Vancouver. Doing some work in Vancouver, which I have to say is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to in my entire fucking life. It is incredible. It's like, staying in this like nice, clean, urban city. You walk 20 minutes down one road and you're at the ocean. And then you just go out on a boat and there's like mountains everywhere, frigging humpback whales. Like, it's nuts.
You saw a whale?
I saw a whale. I went whale watching and I saw a humpback whale.
That's a good word to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a humpback whale. And it was cool. He didn't really like breach as much as I wanted him to. I wanted him to like properly like, you know, jump out, give me a wave with one of his fins or something. He just kind of like blew some air, showed me his tail a little bit. I was like, that's cool. But you know, I would have wanted a little bit more.
Oh, that's quite nice. I mean, yeah. I get what you wanted was the kind of sea life experience where like, they eat them with sticks and make them juggle and stuff like that, yeah?
No. Of his own free will, I just wanted him to entertain me. That's all. That's all I wanted. Not too much to ask. Didn't see any orcas. Apparently, you get a lot of orcas around there. Didn't see any of them. But it was still pretty cool. And just the scenery is frigging gorgeous. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Can you talk about what you was doing, aside from whale watching?
Yeah, it's been a month. Shooting a film called Spread, which stars Harvey Keitel. So,
wow.
Not too bad. Not too shabby.
Was you on set at any point when he was there?
Oh, yeah, mate. Yeah, me and Harvey, improvising together.
Shut up, really?
Yeah, it was surreal. It was fucking mad. I mean, he's
Holy
83.
Shit. But he's Harvey Keitel.
He's Harvey Keitel, yeah. He's Mr. White. He's, you know, Mr. Wolf. He's a lot of misters.
He's Mr. Streets, fucking Cool.
Driver.
That's who he is.
Yeah. So,
oh, my God.
So, yeah, that's pretty awesome. And 83 years old, he's still, like, he's still brilliant, obviously. Yeah. And he's like improvising and stuff, and like it's a comedy, so it's like it's really like nice and fun to do. And my character is—I don't know if I sent you a picture of him. He is proper out there. It's like so. The story of it is this: a woman played by Liz Gillies, she was in like Dynasty recently, and she did like some Disney stuff as a kid. She's got like 14 million Instagram followers. She is playing a woman who wants to be a journalist, but somehow kind of accidentally gets a job at a failing porn magazine, and sort of tries to make the porn magazine that's falling out of his arsehole a more kind of profitable business, particularly aimed towards women. And right. So she has to deal with a lot of the people there. Harvey Keitel's character runs the porn mag called Spread. And I'm the IT guy that falls in love with her as soon as he sees her, and is just a big, big, massive weirdo.
Fantastic.
So typecast, obviously. just a big fucking weirdo. So that's fun. It was good.
I've got to ask you, mate. It's like, I mean, we've been lucky through doing this podcast that we've found ourselves in rooms where, I mean, you getting to ask Dana White, you know, questions, and obviously we've bumped into lots of our favourite fighters and stuff, and been really lucky to, you know, to have had interactions with them. You've obviously been an actor for a fair few years now, and you know, you've been in some incredible things with some incredible people. I talk about imposter syndrome on my Off the Beaten Track podcast quite a lot, and we speak about it sometimes when we talk to fighters. Taking nothing away from anything you've done previously, what's going on in your head when you walk in a room and Harvey Keitel's standing there?
I don't know. I think I was more kind of like worried about I worry about being shit on most jobs. So the fact that Harvey Keitel's there didn't really make a huge difference. That's just my general kind of like base level default paranoia setting. Don't be shit. I tell you what, I'm doing an American accent in it as well. So I was probably more worried about that than anything else. And also, in British comedy, we don't improvise as much as in American comedies. American comedy seemed to improvise loads. So I was a little bit like, oh, I hope this is going to go okay. But it did. It, you know, touch wood and everything. It all went all right. And it was funny. And I felt like what I did was good, and what everyone else was doing was really good. So hopefully it'll be a really good, fun comedy film that you can go to and enjoy. People will laugh, all those things, you know.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was about to say, I thought as soon as I said I was doing an American accent, you'd have been like, oh, well, that just sounds Welsh. So,
well, look, we've missed so many events to chat about. I know we've got our little WhatsApp group, and we have a little natter with Pip and Brian about some bits and bobs that's going on, and we'll definitely get them two boys back on for a catch-up episode soon as well, because we've not had a big boys natter for a while. And I think the first event that we done the pre but didn't do the post was, I guess, one of the most bananas events in the kind of few days leading up to it was Diaz Ferguson. I mean, I know when we done the pre-show, we wasn't talking about Diaz Ferguson. We was talking about Diaz Hamzat. And Tony versus who was Tony?
Li
Xiang, of course. Yeah, who turned up to the press conference in his suit on his own.
I mean, look, we're going to discuss like Dern Janan that happened. Saturday night, and a little bit of Bellator.
Well, do you want to start with that? Do you want to start with what we've just missed?
All I didn't want is people to go, hang on a minute, am I going to have to sit through loads of chat about 279, which was like 3 weeks ago, and I've heard it on other podcasts and all that stuff. We do want to talk a little bit about it, particularly about where Hamzat and Nate and all that stuff are going from here. But we don't want to like bore you with something you've heard to put five hours of since, because it was so long ago. Let's start with a little bit on 279, because it was mental. I suppose it's like, I remember doing the pre-show and saying, I didn't like most of the matchups. I would have rather Nate to fight Tony, all that stuff. And then it's like, I think every collective MMA's fan's dream came true.
Yeah. Like,
the MMA gods were listening. They worked their magic. And somehow Khamzat missed weight by like 8 pounds or whatever the frig it was. And the whole card gets turned on its head. So, yeah, I mean, it was amazing, really, to the fact that we got Nate v. Tony, and Nate won that fight and rode off into the sunset, in my opinion, probably to fight Jake Paul next in a boxing match or something like that. But how do you, not dwelling too much on the fight itself or the preamble, because that's what a lot of people listen to, what do you see happening for Nate? Because he's got his, like, is it real fight promotion that he's he's going to have now as well? Like, what's next for Nate? Do you think it's boxing Jake Paul?
I think that's probably, I mean, don't get me wrong, he could do anything and everybody would watch it. I won't get into the fight, but that fight wasn't a particularly great fight. It was, I think, it was a very good thing that Khamzat wasn't in that fight, because I think
it
would have been a very horrible evening for Nate. I think Nate's proved himself. It was a perfect way to finish with the UFC, I think. Leave that well alone now. You know, I think he's time to step away from that, because there's too many up-and-coming killers. There's probably a couple of fun fights that you'd like to see him in, but I think ultimately he's made his money. He's come out of the UFC perfectly on that night. He's an absolute fan favourite. We love him. You know, every MMA fan loves Nate and Nick. And I think if you want to go and make $10 million or however much you earn fighting a bloke off of YouTube, do it, mate. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, you know, he's got nothing else to prove, has he?
No, Nate's a legend. I mean, he's sort of, in a way, like, won the fight game, because he was never George St. Pierre. He was never Khabib Nurmagomedov. He was never.
But that's why we love him.
Some champion. Well, yeah, exactly. But he still come out of there with more money than the vast, vast, vast majority of fighters, even some that have been champions. Mm. And he's left sort of on his terms to then go and make even more money as, you know, a free agent.
Great, isn't it?
It's pretty great, yeah. It's like there's not many people that will be able to say they've done that.
Yeah.
To be able to have retired with a win after making loads and loads of money, but yet never really being like a champion or anything like that, and then still have the potential to make ridiculous sums of money in the combat sports world post your UFC career. That's a very, very special achievement, I think. And there's not many people that will be able to do that. In terms of his fight with Jake Paul, Jake Paul, by the way, is fighting Anderson Silva. So win or lose, Jake Paul can fight Nate Diaz next. If he loses to Anderson Silva, people will still watch him fight Nate, I think. If he beats Anderson Silva, people will watch him fight Nate. But I've got not a huge amount of interest in it, just because, A, I very rarely have any interest in the Jake Paul fights. But B, he's going to be a lot bigger than Nate. He's probably a better boxer than Nate. I know Nate has got like nice hands and all that kind of stuff, but he's not a knockout artist. He's not, you know, he doesn't hit with any huge amount of power. Obviously, he's taken so much punishment over the years. I can see Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz going quite badly for Nate. And that obviously just makes us all feel a little bit sad. So I don't enjoy the idea of that fight, but I do like the idea of Nate just going, I'm just going to go and do whatever I want to go and make shit tons of money. So good luck to him.
Absolutely. Is anyone interested in Tony fighting on?
Do you know what? Up until that fight with Nate.
Sorry, let me take that back. Tony's got a huge fan base, and there's plenty of Tony Ferguson fans out there. And I didn't mean it in a derogatory way like that. But they did look, both looked, I thought, quite old. and in that fight. And I think, do you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm not suggesting they're not elite level fighters, but when you look further down that card at people like Hamzat, you know, that's what's coming through, and I think that made them look a little bit more older and out of place at that level.
Yeah, I mean, before this fight, there were people talking about Paddy fighting Tony. Mm-hmm. And I was against it because I was like, Paddy doesn't need to be shot straight up there against someone like Tony Ferguson in my head, who, you know, in that first round against Michael Chandler, beat him. Mm-hmm. And then obviously ate that ridiculous front kick to the face that was just awful. Prior to that, he'd been beaten by Benil Dariush, who has got a claim to a title shot, Charles Oliveira, who's the champion at the moment. Or, well, technically he's not the champion, is he? But he sort of is the champion. Mm-hmm. And then Justin Gaethje. And again, most of those by decision.
Mm.
So, like, Tony's only beaten by the best of the best.
Yeah.
So when they were talking about Paddy fighting Tony, I was against it because I felt like Paddy should earn that shot more, and I felt like Tony would be a real handful for him. But after watching the Nate Diaz fight, I almost think I'm not interested in that fight for the complete opposite reason. I actually think Paddy would do him now.
Really?
I think if they made Paddy v Tony tomorrow, Paddy's the favourite.
Wow.
I know. And before the Nate Diaz fight, I wouldn't necessarily have said. I would have said it was a very close fight. Obviously, Paddy's on a great run, but he's not fought anyone the level of Tony, and Tony's only been beaten by the best of the best. But you can't say that anymore because Tony was beat by Nate Diaz. Comfortably. I think convincingly beat by Nate Diaz. So I worry about that fight the complete opposite way. I mean, I'm now looking at Tony Ferguson, which is such a big drop off, but I'm now looking at Tony Ferguson and going, well, if Nick Diaz has to fight again, you make Nick Diaz Tony Ferguson.
Maybe.
But that's such a drop off, isn't it? That's a huge drop off.
Yeah. I mean, to put Tony in with Paddy, I mean, don't get me wrong, we're seeing, I mean, obviously he's ranked a lot higher than what Paddy's, but, you know, seeing, you know, Sugar getting Peter Yarn, it was like, whoa, there's an exciting fight I did not see coming. And I guess, you know, Tony's got a huge name, but he, you know, he's earned that name through absolute wars and being one of the greatest of all time. Paddy's got huge following and huge media. I mean, when we was at London, when he walked out into that octagon, it was unbelievable, the noise for Paddy. Unbelievable. And you know, he's done nothing wrong so far in his UFC career. Obviously, we're both huge fans of Paddy. I don't want to see Paddy versus Tony just yet. I think it's too much of a jump in... I think it's too much of a jump for Paddy at the moment. I really do.
So just making it cut and dry, you think if a fight is made between Tony and Paddy, Tony wins that fight?
I've been getting a bit of shit for not getting off the fence on things like this. I don't think Paddy deserves that fight at the moment. I think there's other fighters ranked above Paddy that if they could get a good payday against a name like Tony Ferguson, who is still, you've just rattled off like who he's been beaten by. And, you know, I think there's other fighters that deserve that shot. I think Paddy will get there 100%, but I just think a little bit too, if it's too soon for him, but I haven't answered the question.
No, I don't want to see Tony fight any ranked lightweight. I don't want to see it because I think he gets done.
Well, Paddy's the money fight there then, isn't it? Because Paddy's media profile is so huge.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah. Paddy's unranked, but still a huge name. And there are people out there, particularly outside of the UK, that think Paddy the Paddy is incredibly beatable. I listen to other podcasts and talk about this. There's a group of people out there that think Paddy is an overrated fighter. Mm-hmm. And so is that therefore the best fight you can make for Tony if he wants to continue fighting? Because if he hung the gloves up now, I'd go, I'd sort of breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
I'd be quite happy to not see Tony fight again now.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. But I mean, I'm now looking at the idea of Paddy versus Tony and going, I worry for Tony in that fight.
Paddy would maul him?
I think Paddy would come out the way Paddy's come out in all his UFC fights, going for his head very, very quickly. And Tony, post that Gaethje fight, where he kind of, the fight was stopped by Herb in the fifth round, and Tony just looked like he was on his feet, but he just looked like he'd just taken way too much damage. And then you throw in the Michael Chandler front kick as well. I think Paddy clips him and he's out. I think the chin might be gone. I don't know. I don't want to see it now for the complete opposite reason to what I didn't want to see it previously.
Yeah.
So what happens with Tony? I just don't know. I'd be quite happy for him to hang the gloves up, but if he wants to still compete, I don't want him fighting anyone ranked. And I don't like the idea of him being at welterweight really either, because I think the size difference there and all that, he's not a huge lightweight. I know he has fought at welterweight before, but he's not a huge lightweight.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've spoke about two people that are, I guess their finest days are behind them now, and they're both in the twilight years and of their careers now. Hamzat Chimaev, very much man of the moment. Shitty attitude to your weight cut. You know, I don't know what happened in that weight cut, but whatever happens, when you're fighting that level of fight with that much money involved in it and that much pending on a winning that fight, you know, you make weight, you know, and I think, like, you know, whatever happened, don't get me wrong, it worked out that the right fights were probably made on that card.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to throw out there, I'm losing a lot of respect and interest in him as a person. I don't really like the way he talks. I don't think it's particularly gracious. I don't think it was very... I don't know if he's decided that he's now going to portray himself as the bad guy. I don't know. But he didn't do anything that weekend to endear himself to me in any way, shape or form. Not that he gives a fuck, but I didn't like his attitude. His fighting is obviously different level, and I think we're going to see we're going to ultimately see him as a champ, I think, soon. But I just think, like, it just, that whole approach to it was pretty shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's stories coming out about the fact that the doctor told him to stop cutting weight and all that stuff. But you're right, there's an element of be there on the scales being like, sorry, guys, rather than, you know, I can't remember exactly what he did, but he didn't look upset, did he?
No, he's laughing.
Yeah. Did he flip the bird as well? I can't remember.
I'm not sure. I'm sure he at some point would have said, I'm going to kill everyone about 50 fucking times in every interview.
Yeah.
Boring.
See, I don't mind the shtick. I don't like the not being happy about I don't like the laughing at not making weight.
Mm.
But the whole, I'm going to kill this guy and I'm going to eat him and all this kind of smash him, I love all of that. I'm into it. And I think the performance is matched with that kind of thing. It is like sort of playing the bad guy. It's the final boss of the game and all that kind of stuff. And I don't mind it. I'm into it. I think ultimately the performances will bring people round. I think he's going to be the bad guy, maybe in this fight, maybe obviously in this fight, and then in the fight that he has coming up, he'll probably be the bad guy a little bit. But I think as soon as he mauls everyone and then just talks in the way that he does, I think people will sort of gravitate towards him again. I don't think he's going to lose that much stock to the point where he can't gain it back. I think he'll gain it back in one or two fights, probably, especially if they're impressive performances. I think the big question is he now a middleweight or does he go back to welterweight? That's the really big question on everyone's lips as of what's going to happen. Because he hadn't missed weight before, but he did in that Gilbert Burns thing have that slight kind of Daniel Cormier-Tao situation going on. So can he make 170? If he believes and his camp believes he can make 170, I think his coach has come out and said he wants him to make 185 next. But if they want him to make 170, I think he needs to prove that he can do it again before fighting for the belt. And I think that Colby Covington won't take the fight with him because there's no guarantee that he'll make weight. And that's understandable. So he's got to fight someone that is a top-end guy that will also be happy to fight Chimaev because he's a way bigger name than they are. And that leads me to the winner of Bilal Muhammad, Sean Brady, that happens on October 22nd at UFC. I want to say 282? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. No, 280. 280, yeah. Is it? Yeah, the Islam Makhachev Oliveira card. So Sean Brady versus Bilal Muhammad, huge fight on that card at welterweight. Two fantastic fighters that are overlooked by some of the more bigger names in the division, like your Hamzat Usmans, Leon Edwards and the like, Masvidal and such. And I think he should fight the winner of that, prove that he can make 170, win that fight against two people that are very good grapplers, particularly Sean Brady, prove that he wins it, and then he gets a title shot at 170, no problem. If he moves up to middleweight, I think the obvious fight is Paulo Costa. There's a built-in storyline there. They've had loads of beef. They've had loads of altercations. And I don't like the idea. As much as I liked the idea of him fighting Robert Whittaker a while ago, when I thought there was no problem with him being at welterweight, I now think if he...
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Potentially wants to do a fight at middleweight because that's where his future lies. Don't let him fight Whittaker now. Just think, what if Whittaker beats him? Then what do you do? He's just kind of sat at middleweight taking fights. Let him fight Paulo Costa, which has got built-in like beef into the storyline. Mm-hmm. It's a more winnable fight for him. Not that Hamzat needs winnable fights. Everyone's a winnable fight for Hamzat at the moment, it seems. But let him fight Costa. If he wins that fight, give him a title shot straight away against either Adesanya, Pereira, whatever happens there. And then in one of his first title defenses, he can fight Robert Whittaker. because Robert Whittaker really and truly is clearly the second best middleweight in the world at the moment, deserves to fight for the title, but he can't fight Adesanya for a third time, especially in this quick succession. So try and give someone else the belt, whether it's Pereira or Hamzat, if they can beat Adesanya, and then Whittaker can get a title shot. So don't make the Hamzat-Whittaker fight now when there's no belt on the line. Wait, get him to fight Costa. He beats Costa, let him fight potentially Adesanya, and then he can fight Whittaker for his first title shot. That makes the most sense to me for a Hamzat trajectory if he's going to go to 185.
I'm down with a Costa fight. I'd like to see that.
The build-up would be fun. It'll be ridiculous because, again, Ariel Helwani keeps tweeting out about, like, God, the babyface turn of Paulo Costa. Everyone's now a big Paulo Costa fan because he's, like, cutting people's hair on the MMA hour and eating liver with the liver key. I'm like, no one I know likes Paulo Costa. Like, no one is really buying into this new thing of Paulo Costa. It's like, no, we still remember that he was a massive dick with the Vettori weight cut. He was a massive dick with the whole drinking, saying he was drinking red wine before the Adesanya fight. Like, no one is a huge Paulo Costa fan, as far as I'm aware. It's this weird false narrative.
He's winning me over, I've got to be honest.
No! Really? Yeah. Well, I'll have to take it all back then.
All the secret juice stuff's making me smile.
Oh, I mean, really?
Yeah, he's handsome as well, isn't he?
Well, obviously he's handsome, yeah. I mean, he's a gorgeous man. But, like, but it's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm not into it. I'm not, I still think, no, he's not a baby face. It's just that Hamzat's also a bit of a bad guy. It's a bad guy versus bad guy fight. It's not a baby face heel fight or something.
I mean, we're talking middleweight and welterweight. Like, where's Darren Till in the mix at the moment? What's going on? Has there been any word on what the deal is with him?
I think he's booked to fight Dricus du Plessis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I don't know when that is, but I think he's booked to fight him.
Oh, I'm down with that fight. As far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I think that's a great fight for him because Dricus is a good fighter, but yeah. He showed some holes in his game last time. The cardio looked a bit dodgy. He was just kind of slugging away. And Darren is a methodical striker to the point where sometimes I think he sort of stifles his own striking because he overthinks. That's in my head. I feel like he should let things loose a little bit more when he strikes recently. But he's a very technical, methodical striker. And if Dricus du Plessis gasses out quickly because he's trying to take his head off and he hasn't, and then he's left with Darren Till in front of him who's picking shots, who can hit hard, I think Dricus could be in trouble. So I think it's a very good fight for both Dricus in terms of getting the name value of Darren Till if he wins, but it's a good fight for Darren as well because he's not got to worry about someone spamming takedowns on him or anything like that. It'll be someone that's fighting him stood up. And I think someone that's a less technically sound striker, but the problem is maybe someone that is going to throw caution to the wind and start and go in for him. And I don't know how Darren's going to react to that. It'd be interesting.
Yeah. Shall we touch on former guest of the show, Corey Sandhagen? Because that's a fight that... was there anything else on the previous card that you wanted to touch on?
No, other than, like, I feel super sorry for Li Jingliang. He got the worst deal of that whole fucking week.
He
went out and bought a lovely suit that he couldn't show because they cancelled the press conference. Then he has to, like, accept a fight with Rodriguez when he was supposed to be fighting Tony Ferguson. And Daniel Rodriguez was 10 pounds heavier than him.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It was so apparent as well.
And he's less of a name. And yeah. I think Li Jingliang won the fight.
Oh, I thought he won
that. I thought he did one fight. So he was so fucked that whole week. No one had a worse week than Li Jingliang. That was so bad. That is like one of the worst MMA weeks ever. Can't wear your fancy suit. Then you have an opponent change against a guy with less of a name than your original opponent. And he's 10 pounds heavier than you. And then the judges, in my opinion, score the fight wrong.
Yeah. 100%.
That sucks. That absolutely 100%.
Sucks. I think the UFC will be kind to him. I think they...
You would hope.
You really would hope. Like, that's a rough old... You know, he got the wrong end of the deal. You know, all the right fights are made elsewhere and you know, he was the unfortunately the runt of the litter that got what was left and come out of it the wrong end as well.
I think we should chat about what happened over this weekend.
Okay.
I mean, let's make it current. I mean, is it fair to say you didn't watch too much of it? Is that right?
No. So I saw the Latifi fight, and because let me just pull up the card, because we're talking about the Mackenzie Dern and Yang Jianan fight. Here we go. There's the results. Yeah. And so I remember, I had some friends around, and I had a couple of drinks, and in my mind, the Latifi fight was the last fight before Dern. Unbeknown to me, it was on the prelims. And so I just thought, I'm about to get the main fight. And it was like midnight or whatever. So I thought, I'm going to stay up and watch that. And then let me just pull up the results. I just need to pull them up. Because the fight that I saw that topped the prelims, I'm trying to remember who it was. Let me just pull it up, fight results. Was absolutely amazing. It was
was it Joaquim Silva versus Jesse Ronson?
Boom, that's the one. My internet's being very, very tricky at the moment. Bear with me a sec. And I thought that was really good. And then I was like, oh, I think I've misjudged this. I've now got another like five fights, and I was like, "Yeah, I've had too much red wine, and it's too late. I'm going to bed," and I've not had a chance to catch up. I've obviously seen what the results were. Did you watch?
I kind of cherry picked a few fights that I watched, because it was just I've been busy over the weekend with the kids and all that kind of stuff. So I cherry picked a few fights. I watched Yang Jianan versus Mackenzie Dern, and
The fight I was talking about was Castaneda and Santos, which got fight of the night as well. I thought that was fantastic.
Oh right, no, I didn't see that fight. Mm. I did not see that fight. But I did see Yang Jianan versus Mackenzie Dern.
How was that?
I thought it was a pretty good fight. It was sort of back and forth a little bit, but it was like Jianan won the first, and then it was just, it's so interesting watching people that are like full-on jiu-jitsu specialists, and it always baffles me. I'm sure there's a legit reason for it, but it always baffles me that jiu-jitsu specialists like your Damian Myers, your Paul Craigs, and now like Mackenzie Dern's, when it gets to the ground, they are lethal. But getting it to the ground seems difficult for them, whereas obviously the wrestlers seem to... I don't know. I'm sure this is just a stupid armchair fan's perspective where there's something I'm completely missing here. But I'm like, are they not just doing constant wrestling classes to just learn more double legs and single legs, just to get the fight to the ground so much easier? It seems to be such an effort for jiu-jitsu specialists to get the fight to the ground where they are the best. Like, Mackenzie Dern did it like twice, but one of them was like by accident. They sort of fell on each other, it seems. And then another one was like that thing of like, kind of trying to pull guard. So you've pulled someone on top of you where they're in a more advantageous position, knowing that you'll be able to reverse it and do other things and stuff like that. And that's sort of where it went. But I'm like, why are there not more like taking, again, it's probably a stupid fan perspective and I hold my hands up to that. But I look at some of the best wrestlers, I'm like, what? They just blitz in double legs, your Curtis Blades and your people like that. Yeah, I don't know. What were you going to say?
Because you're right. You see it with like specialists, like, you know, like Ryan Hall's a prime example. Like, you know, he's just,
yes,
you're just waiting for that opportunity, and to the point where he will just roll around the floor. And we saw it with Paul Craig at the London card.
Yeah,
you know, he was just trying to get him to the ground. And in the end, it was like, it was almost quite an awkward fight to watch, wasn't it? Because it wasn't looking like he was going to get him to the ground. And I think, I don't think that's necessarily a lazy assumption. I think if someone's speciality is that, but and it's not working, then there should be, you know, a backup plan to get him down. But I don't know. You know, you're fighting Yan Xianan, who he's no joke. Do you know what I mean? And and I'm sure she's obviously based a big part of her training in not getting taken down by Mackenzie Dern, because that's not a place, you know, anyone wants to be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the what's coming up, I think Mackenzie Dern was, you know, she's not far off a title shot potentially had she won that fight. But unfortunately for her, it went to Yan Xianan. I think that was the right decision. Some people were giving 10-8. I think maybe in round two and maybe round five or something like that, in which case you could maybe score it for Mackenzie Dern. But I don't think I gave any 10-8. I think I kept... And one of the judges, I think, scored it like 29-29 or something like that. I can't remember. So it was... So the judge probably saw a 10-8 in there as well. But two of the judges scored it how I did, I think, which was just a... 29-28 would be a three-round fight, wouldn't it? Basically, 3-2 for Yan Xianan is how I scored it. And that's how two of the judges scored it as well. I feel like that was the right decision. Yan Xianan survived because that fourth round, she had Mackenzie on her for most of the round and was struggling to keep out of omoplatas and chokes and arm bars and all sorts of things. But she did it. She survived. She did well. She's working down at Team Alpha Male with like Uriah Faber and stuff like that. So, you know, she's clearly improving that side of her game and she survived it. I think what could be an interesting fight next for Yan Xianan is maybe Rose Namajunas. Rose, I don't think, fights for the belt straight away because she had that awful fight with Carla Esparza. Carla is fighting Zhang Weili next. If Zhang wins, then yes, Rose does have two wins over Zhang Weili. But do you really want to see a third fight between them so soon? I don't. So I think maybe you do something like Rose Namajunas versus Yan Xianan. And I tell you what, I think the UFC would really love it if Yan Xianan versus Zhang Weili was a fight they could make for that belt, because they apparently really want to break into the Asia market. I think they've got fight cards lined up to happen in Asia over the next year or so. So Zhang Weili versus Yan Xianan,
huge
in China, Thailand, wherever they're doing cards in Asia, could be massive for them in terms of a business thing. So I think giving Yan Xianan a fight against Rose Namajunas in a number one contender fight, that could be a really good fight. But then Rose herself has mentioned moving up to 125, but she's also very good friends with Valentina Shevchenko. So I don't know how that would work, if that would work, but that's the fight I want to see. Yan Xianan versus Rose Namajunas. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I'm down with that. How was, tell me about Randy Brown and Trinaldo.
Do you know what? I love Randy Brown. I think he's got such a laid-back style, but yet he's so long and rangy and does really great strikes and stuff. I really like Randy Brown. I think the decision was correct, 29-28. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. One, I think Randy Brown, when he starts fighting up into the rankings, God, he's got to work on his ground game, because Trinaldo is a fair amount smaller than him and was dominating him on the ground in that last round. Really, really dominating him on the ground in that last round. But Brown survived, which is great. But you put Randy Brown up against, obviously a Hamzat, but like Sean Brady, Bilal Muhammad, Kamaru Usman. I mean, anyone that's a half-decent grappler, wrestler in that welterweight division, Colby Covington, there's a lot of them in that top end of that division. Big, big problems. I think it really struggled because Trinaldo's smaller than a lot of those guys. So even with Trinaldo's size disadvantage against Randy Brown, Randy still couldn't get back to his feet very easily. So I think he's really got to work on that there. And I think there's a ceiling for Randy Brown at the moment.
against any decent grappler in the welterweight division. So I think there's improvements to be made there. But I love his style. I think he's a really great fighter. One thing he did do, I don't know if it was in the first round, was a very, very blatant fence grab. Trinaldo had him, was pulling him away from the fence, and Randy Brown was really down low, but grabbed the fence in order to stop his legs being taken from under him. And it just made me think, what would you do? What's the appropriate punishment for that? Because what we see with a lot of these like fence grabs and stuff like that is there's no punishment. There is no punishment. It's just don't do that. And sometimes they smack their hand away. And sometimes it leads to a takedown actually happening. But sometimes the damage has been done and the takedown has been avoided. So they've won. They've cheated and they've won. So what's the right thing? Do you think a point should have been should be taken away whenever that happens, which does feel very harsh when you're talking about the 10-point must system in the way that it's used? Like, it just feels like a really harsh thing, but I tell you what, it would stop people doing it.
Take off a finger. I wouldn't do it again after that, mate.
That's very true. Let's go like proper Roman, or like I've just started episode one of House of Dragons. That's very House of Dragons style.
There you go.
Nip it in the bud, mate.
You'd only have to make an example out of a couple of fighters and you'd never see it again.
I'll tell you what, as soon as the ref goes into the octagon with that sword, you are going to be shitting yourself. Yeah, it's got a big broadsword and like a tiny little chopping block for fingers. Just standard ref attire.
Oh, brilliant. It's the fact Mark Goddard's just got some bolt cutters on his belt.
Fucking hell. Mark Goddard, I could just imagine Mark Goddard now just really knowing his way with a broadsword.
I'm telling you, suits him.
If the UFC down to the ground.
Said, "Mark, look, we've changed the rules here," he'd be all over that. He'd be like, "Yep, no worries. I was sharpening my sword this morning. Funnily enough,
he's got a collection of broadswords and shields.
He's been waiting for this moment.
Oh God, hasn't he just?" I don't know, and I kind of think.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think there should be more... like changing of position, like going, oh, you grabbed the fence to stop a takedown. So now you have to start. We pause in the action and we restart the action with you on bottom with your opponent in guard or something like that.
I think that's fair. Because for some reason it's looked upon as like a minor hiccup. And it's like you're not going to take a point for do it one time. But that one time could have a massive... bearing on the fight, so I think what you said really makes sense. I think, if you repeat that, then I'm sure at some point the ref will go, right, I'm taking a point. But like you say, it only takes one that you get away with that can really change the outcome of a fight.
Judging by the third round, had Trinaldo got him down in the first round, Brown wasn't getting back up. I know he would have had more energy, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. So it's all hypothetical.
But...
Brown struggled massively in that third round. It makes me think maybe he would have struggled in the first round. And if that's the case, then Trinaldo could have won that fight.
And, without putting too much drama on the situation, he's cheated.
Yeah.
That is cheating, and he's not been punished for it.
I wonder if there should be more things like that, some kind of minor infringement that feels really harsh to take a point away, but... maybe you have to just start in a different position and, I don't know if you would, but maybe you could do similar things for eye pokes, groin strikes, stuff like that. I don't know. You go, right, you've made the mistake of doing that. I know you shouldn't have, you maybe didn't mean to, but now we've got to start where your opponent wants the thing to start, whether that's in guard on the ground or maybe that's a bit harsh. I feel like the fence grab, it works because you're preventing a takedown that should have happened. So you should stop the action and go, the takedown did happen, get in guard. Yeah. Groin strikes maybe less so, because again, it's so awkward when people are moving and stuff as well. I think that would be quite harsh if you're having a stand-up exchange and there's just an accidental groin kick and then you're like, now you're on your back.
Yeah,
that's maybe a bit too harsh. But for the fence grabs, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
We also, I didn't really see, I saw Sadiq Youssef with a 30-second guillotine or whatever the hell it was that he wrapped up on Don Shaynes, who came in from the regional scene in America. So I don't know how much credibility to put on that win, really. I didn't see much else of the UFC card that's worth talking about, in my opinion. Did you want to talk about anything, or do you want to quickly move on to a little bit of Bellator?
I just want to touch on some retirements, because I think Latifi potentially retired. I think he got the win over Olenek, and I think, you know, he was basically as good as said, like, I think I'm done. You know, entertaining fighter over the years, and if he has retired, then enjoy your retirement, Latifi. But before we touch on Bellator, I want to touch on the retirement that I think a lot of us didn't see coming, and that's the retirement of Jose Aldo, because I mean, what an absolute, well, he's a goat, isn't he?
Oh, for sure. I think he's got to be one of the best fighters ever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, John Jones is the youngest ever UFC champion, but Jose Aldo was younger than him when he was the WEC champion, and it's just that the UFC didn't have the lighter weight classes at the time. So there's an argument to be made that the youngest ever UFC champion really is Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
What just an unbelievable career. I'm looking through some of his wins now and stuff. I mean, going for Cub Swanson, Mike Brown, Uriah Faber, Kenny Florian, Chad Mendes, Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie, Ricardo Lamas, Chad Mendes again, Frankie Edgar again, Jeremy Stevens, Renato Moicano, Marlon Vera, and look how good Vera's looked recently. Pedro Munoz, Rob Font, when Rob Font was on a tear recently. I mean,
let's just look at all of their names, right?
He could have been fighting for the belt rather than fighting Merab Dvalishvili recently.
Yeah.
Because he was on a three-fight win streak and he's Jose fucking Aldo.
Yeah. That every name that you've listed there is not a prospect. Every name on there is a champion or a stone-cold top-three-ranked killer.
Yep.
Jose was absolutely unstoppable. I don't know. I'd like to say that the Conor fight had some bearing on the remainder of his career, but it didn't, because he come back and had another absolute tear. Like you say, beating Rob Font. And it was, we was talking maybe 2 months ago, or even less than that, about the fact that Jose could be getting that title shot again. And also, just seems like one of the most loveliest guys around as well. Just seems like such a nice dude. And just seeing some of the kind of reactions online, he's just the greatest of the greats, all just saying, you know, absolute goat, one of the best. Something I did see on social media this week before we get on to Bellator. I don't know if Michael Bisping's going to come out of retirement and fight Conor McGregor. I think Conor was like just looking through his UFC phone book of Twitter contacts as to who he hasn't moaned about or had a go at, and it turns out it's Mike Bisping this week. So he started digging him out, and you're not going to get a polite response from Bisping, are you? If you poke that, you're going to get a mouthful back, aren't you? And that's what happened. And I've seen some footage of Conor back sparring. I don't know when he's going to ever make a comeback. And I know it's impossible to do an episode without talking about him, but it's becoming more and more, I'm becoming more and more uninterested in seeing him compete again.
Well, he's acting now, isn't he? He's doing the Roadhouse remake with Jake Gyllenhaal. So that's what he's doing at the moment, and why he's looking so hench. And that's what I think the beef with Bisping was. I mean, they have had altercations in the past. But that's what the beef with Bisping was about. Something to do with acting. I don't know. I don't really get it. But, yeah, I mean,
I want to touch on Roadhouse, right? Have you ever seen the original Roadhouse?
No, I know it's Patrick Swayze, but I've not seen it.
Right. It's one of them films that people regard as like this great film, right? It's so bad. It's so bad. Like, I've watched it a lot when I was growing up, and it's really terrible. There's a fight scene where a big fat guy gets taken out by a stuffed bear. That gives you an insight into how bad that film is. And I don't know why they're remaking it. It's a shockingly bad film. I will definitely say to our listeners, if you've got nostalgic, fond recollection of Roadhouse, which I did, and then somebody that worked with my wife went, said to her, like, oh, yeah, it's one of the greatest films ever. So she was like, oh, should we watch it? And I was like, definitely, I'll watch it again. I love it. Put it on. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so bad. Like, so bad. And yet, they're remaking it with Jake Gyllenhaal, who's a legit superstar.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're obviously going to make it good. That's just one of the weird things. Like, you can use the name Roadhouse and go, oh, people know what it is and might be interested in seeing it. So it's got a built-in fan base already. And we can also actually make a good movie out of it. So... yeah. Yeah, maybe they will. Who fucking knows? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Bellator or Sandhagen?
Do you know what? I just want to stick with Aldo a little bit because I think he truly deserves it.
Sorry, we should just glossed over Aldo and started talking about Conor McGregor again, should
but
we?
But that's what happens, isn't it? But that is what happens. Like, so many fans now... they've never really seen Jose Aldo in his prime. Unless you count what recently as his prime, because he went through such a tear that we just spoke about. Was 25-1 before he met Conor McGregor, and we all know about the 13-second KO. If they fought 10 times, would that have happened again? Probably not. The build-up to the fight, Aldo was so kind of out of his comfort zone with this world tour and the way Conor was behaving. It was the perfect game plan from Conor from like 6 months prior to the fight took place. It was the perfect game plan from Conor, and you have to respect it and tip your hat to it. But even when you look at the losses that Aldo has had, you've got Conor, then you've got Max Holloway twice. Again, it's Max Holloway. And not to mention, what you've got to remember when you're looking at any featherweight at the time, they had had, Jose Aldo was like the top dog in the featherweight division from about 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
So he then
that
gets
in
beat.
Itself is amazing.
But what it means is any featherweight has been training for a good 6 years before Conor came along to fight Jose Aldo. And then Max Holloway beat him in 2017. This is nearly 10 years of dominance that Aldo had, where every young fighter coming up is like, oh, to be a champion, I'd need to learn how to beat someone like Jose Aldo. And they're training for Jose Aldo. And they still can't do anything about Jose Aldo until you get to Conor. And then Max Holloway, who obviously has got the physical advantages of being so tall and all that kind of stuff. After that, he loses to Alexander Volkanovski, pound for pound greatest fighter on the planet at the moment. After that, it says a loss to Marlon Moraes. If you watch that fight, he did not lose to Marlon Moraes. He beat Marlon Moraes. That was a win. So you've got Conor McGregor, Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski, and then you're looking at him dropping down to bantamweight and losing to Petr Yan, who, again, one of the best fighters on the planet. And then after that, he's on a free fight win streak. Fights Merab Dvalishvili in altitude when Merab's
strong points.
He didn't turn up. And the altitude, I think, was a big factor for a lot of fighters on that card.
Yeah.
And it just didn't go the way we all wanted to go. Don't get me wrong. I love Merab. I think Merab's a great fighter. I'm a big Merab fan. But this was not the fight to make, in my opinion. They should have had Jose, I think, fighting for a belt or fighting someone like Dominic Cruz. So I think that was all a real, real shame, but it was what it was.
Okay.
It's just so, he needs to be seen as such a legend of the sport. and someone that still, I think, to this day now, could put a 3 or 4 fight win streak together at bantamweight or at featherweight. Like, he is really, really good. I don't like the idea that he's only going to be remembered as the post-Connor Aldo.
Yeah. I think to your average casual, then anyone that fights Connor will always be the guy that fought Connor. But I think for anybody that really loves MMA, they're all going to be going, it's a shame that we're about to see, you know, we're no longer going to get to see one of the greats that was Jose. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolute legend. I've not seen huge amounts of Bellator. Did you want to touch on the Henderson Peter Queeley card in Dublin?
Not massively.
Oh, okay.
There was the Yoel Romero fight on that card, and he dispatched of Melvin Manhoef very, very easily. Took him down. As well. And he retired. I mean, combined age of about 91, I think it was, in the cage when Romero fought Melvin Melvin Manhoef. Yoel Romero was talking about going back down to middleweight. I really don't want to see that. I think he's much better off staying at light heavyweight. I think he'd have to prove that he could make it back down to 185. He's always struggled with that weight cut, and now he's older, he looks bigger. Just stay at 205 and do that. In terms of this weekend, I mean, the Peter Queeley fight as well, Benson won that. I've not got a huge amount to say about it.
No, another win for former guest Leah McCourt as well.
From
what I gather, she's over at Next Gen now. It looks like she's training at Next Gen, right. I believe.
Well, I know she's been friends with Molly for a long time, I think. So that's great stuff. And that would only do well for both of them, because Leah ideally needs help with her striking. Mm-hmm. And Molly probably needs more help with her ground game. So if those two are working together, I know there's a big size win-win difference there, but if those two are working together, that's fantastic. In terms of this weekend, we had a few things going on. You had Patricio Pitbull beat Borix by unanimous decision to stay the featherweight champion. But what I thought was maybe more interesting was AJ McKee moving up to lightweight and fighting Spike Carlisle. If you haven't seen it, it's a really fun fight, particularly the first round. Spike Carlisle just runs at AJ McKee and just opens up, and it just goes a bit mental for the first couple of minutes. The kind of exchanges on the ground, those exchanges, the jiu-jitsu and wrestling exchanges, were all really, really fun. But then Spike Carlisle sort of gasses out, and AJ really takes over, particularly in the third round, but in the second a bit as well. But that was really, really fun, particularly the first round of that fight. AJ won that by a clear decision. And then there was an interesting situation with Aaron Pico. And if you haven't heard of Aaron Pico, a lot of the Americans see him as like one of the brightest prospects in MMA overall. They're very, very, very high on Aaron Pico. He was sort of fast-tracked a bit too soon, had a few losses, but then has kind of regained his feet a little bit. He's still very young. But he had his shoulder dislocated or something like that within the first minute of the first round of his fight. And he fought on till the end of the round, trying to pop his own shoulder back in place during the fight. He got to the corner, and his coach is like yanking at his arm, desperately trying to pop it back in place. And Aaron Pico's just there like, yeah, this is happening. Like, he's not like screaming or looks like he's in loads of pain. I'm sure he was. And then the doctor comes in and sort of stops it because they can't sort his arm out. I don't know if there was actually maybe potentially a broken clavicle or something like that in there as well. But you could see
That yanking of his arm, I like that.
Yeah, exactly. But he felt like his shoulder was just out of the socket and it needed to be popped back in place, and they couldn't pop it back in place. But he was there like upset that he couldn't continue, like annoyed at the doctor and the ref, and you're like, Jesus Christ, this guy is tough as nails.
They're weird fighters, aren't they?
They're fucking so mad. I'd be rolling around on the floor and he's just like fucking Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon trying to smash it against a locker or something. Yeah, absolutely crazy, crazy scene. So if you haven't seen the Bellator this weekend, it was actually pretty decent. Win for JJ as well, our old guest on the show, JJ Wilson. If you haven't checked out that interview, JJ Wilson is fucking mad. Like holds his breath for like 5 minutes whilst diving with sharks. He survived an armed robbery, took a bullet and survived that, but dispatched of the armed robbers as well. Took them down and like smashed them up.
Insane episode like, that.
Proper superhero shit. It's one of our first episodes, so you got to scroll through the back catalogue a little bit. But check out our interview with JJ Wilson. It's a corker. And he's now at lightweight doing bits there. He struggled with his weight cuts a little bit down at featherweight. Now a lightweight doing very, very well. And that is about it for me and Bellator, I think. Is there anything else we particularly want to discuss?
I just want to touch on the fact that Corey Sandhagen's performance was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and you know, Song Yadong did really well as well. Take nothing away from him. His stock went up. He's still very young. But Sandhagen, showed that class. Showed that he's, I think, rounding out his game a lot more with going for takedowns and stuff like that. Like, I think he learned a lot from the Petr Yan fight.
Yeah.
And about it being a five-round fight. And also the TJ Dillashaw fight as well, which, again, I still think he won that TJ Dillashaw fight. He's doing well. And I suppose it sounds like the fight to make now is Corey Sandhagen versus Chito Vera. Sign me up all day long for that one. I cannot wait for that. If that happens, I'll be so excited. Sandhagen Vera will be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, I'm all over that, mate. All over that. Okay, well, look, we'll be back. I think next week you're going to catch our chat with John Hathaway, and you're in for a treat there because John's story is absolutely remarkable. Long-time MMA fans will obviously know John from his heyday in the UFC, beating the likes of Rick Story and Diego Sanchez, and then has been away. And it's horrific what he's had to go through, and you'll hear his story. And it's absolutely inspiring, and then you're going to get to see him fight in Octagon on the 15th. That's Octagon with a K. You can go watch John's fight there. But honestly, that's coming next week, and it's an absolutely cracking chat. And then we've got some big cards to talk about, haven't we? We've got the card.
Oh, the card. I mean, I almost want to just pull it. I know we're running late, but I almost need to pull this card out. I mean, the Makhachev Oliveira card is truly something to behold. It's got absolutely everything. Every fight on there is an absolute fucking corker. I'm just trying to pull it up now.
AJ versus Dillashaw, Petr Yan versus O'Malley, Dariush versus Gamrot. Oh, blimey, what else have we got? Bilal Muhammad, Sean Brady, Ustemir versus Krylov.
Good. Yan versus O'Malley, as you mentioned. Dariush versus Gamrot is an absolute cracking fight.
Yeah.
Dariush could really be going for a title shot. I can't believe he's ranked 6. He should be much higher than that.
Absolutely.
And Gamrot's looking great. Bilal Muhammad, Sean Brady, what a fight that is at welterweight. That's an absolute cracker.
Makhachev as well. Got Makhachev's fighting on that card.
Yes, Makhachev's fighting on that card. Oh, it is an absolute cracker. That main card, that is outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous, that main card. And then you've got some corkers on the prelims as well. Cannot wait for that. Cannot wait. We'll do a big preamble to that and then a post show, hopefully, as well. We won't leave you hanging on the post show like we did with 279. We'll have all that for you.
The card after that, we have got to reach out to our boy Arnold Allen and see if we can get Arnold on for a chat. Heading up the card, fighting Calvin Kattar. I mean, that's going to be great. I mean,
absolutely.
Come on, like Arnold gets a win there. He's got to be, you know, pushing towards that title contention then, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what would he be on, a 10-fight win streak if he beats Calvin Kattar? I mean, yeah, you can't deny him any longer, surely. I know that there's a bit of a problem at 145. And Alexander Volkanovski has said that he's going to try and make 155 as a backup for Islam versus Oliveira. So we'll see what happens there and what happens in general at 155 and if Volkanovski goes up. But Arnold Allen, obviously a former guest of the show now as well. Josh Emmett, he's got a case for a title shot. I would lean towards Arnold Allen just because of the amount of wins. But Emmett fans would probably say that maybe he's beat bigger names. But if Arnold Allen beats Calvin Kattar, I think he surpasses Josh Emmett as the next guy up for a title shot. But then Yair Rodriguez is floating about as well. So who knows what will happen there, but certainly going to be interesting.
Yeah, and they're all good fights.
All good fights. Right.
Right. We're back next time. In the meantime, go check out the back catalogue. Over 100 episodes are there to be listened to for free. It's a real who's who of UFC, Bellator, Cage Warriors, PFL. We've had them all on. Go and have a little rummage in the archives and go and have a listen. And don't, whatever you're doing, miss next week's episode with John Hathaway. It's an absolutely cracking listen, that one. We're on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Give us a follow. And if you want any of them, drop us a line. Let us know you'd like to see us chat to, or just give us a like, love, share, or a retweet, and nudge your mates and tell them to go and listen to the MMA podcast. Thanks ever so much for all your support this far, and we'll be back next time, right, Blake?
We will. Thanks very much, guys. Catch you later.